It's your host, Alan Stein. In case you missed it, here are this week's episodes of the Pure Sweat Basketball Show. Today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show, your athleticism is the foundation of your entire game. That's why the best players in the world are in the best shape and move really, really well on the court.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done!
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Reese Davis from ESPN, and you're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
Thanks for tuning into the show that aims to serve the basketball community at every level by making every episode a micro clinic. I'm your host, Alan Stein. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Dr. Dish, the creators of the world's best shooting machine. Today's episode is aimed directly at players and shares how to build the complete basketball player. Coaches, I highly recommend you nudge your players to listen or listen to this as a team before your next workout. But before I dive in, did you know that Crossover makes film sessions more efficient by clipping and tagging your video for you? With a turnaround time as short as 12 hours, Crossover can provide you with shot charts and stats that you can access from any mobile device. Visit crossoverwithak.com/puresweat to try a game for free. All serious and committed basketball players, turn up the volume and get out a pen and a notepad. I'm talking to you. If you want to build yourself into a complete basketball player, you must start by laying a solid foundation. Your athleticism is the foundation of your entire game. That's why the best players in the world are in the best shape and move really, really well on the court. By improving your athleticism, your strength, power, quickness, balance, agility, reaction, you'll be able to perform your basketball skills, shooting, ball handling, passing, rebounding, and defending, at a much higher level. You'll be able to perform them with more efficiency, and you'll be able to perform them for longer before fatigue sets in. Now, I know most of you listening don't have a traditional offseason because you play AAU, travel ball, summer leagues, and camps. However, the spring and summer are times when you must be conscious of making improvements to your athleticism and your skill development. It's a time when basketball performance workouts should be a high priority. A couple of brief workouts per week are more than sufficient if you train intensely and if you train with purpose. As long as your workouts are purposeful and progressive, improvements will be made. And little improvements will add up big time over the course of an offseason. I want you to look at your game like a house. First, you must pour a strong foundation. If you neglect this initial step, your house won't last. If you don't take care of your body, you won't move well on the court, and you'll be riddled with injury. Once you've laid the foundation, you can begin building your house. Well, how do you build a house? Brick by brick. You lay each brick with precision. You lay each brick with care. You need to know that every brick is important. Now, these quote-unquote bricks are the fundamental skills of your game. Shooting, ball handling, passing, rebounding, and defending. And every brick matters. Every workout is a brick. Every practice is a brick. Every shot is a brick. Every pass is a brick. You must be meticulous with every brick if you want to have a remarkable house. Once you've laid your foundation with your athleticism and you've built your framework with your skills brick by brick, it's time to add the walls. After all, what good is a house without walls? The walls, which hold everything together, is the mental side. It's a culmination of three traits: basketball IQ, ability to be coached, and mental toughness. Once your walls are in place, you need to have a roof. And the roof is your heart, your grit, your determination, and your motor. The roof will ultimately determine the value of your house. Now, it doesn't matter if you have a solid foundation and four sturdy walls, if you have a leaky roof, your heart and grit matters. To parallel the analogy of building a house, I want you to picture building your game the way you would a pyramid. We start at the bottom with the body. That's your basketball athleticism, your movement efficiency, and making sure you're minimizing dysfunction. The next level is your skill. Shooting, passing, rebounding, defending, and ball handling. The next level is your brain, your basketball IQ, your mental toughness, your communication. And the top level is your heart, your motor, your determination, your grit, your passion. Now remember this when looking at your pyramid. It doesn't matter how athletic you are. If you aren't skilled, there'll be a finite limit to how good you can be. And it doesn't matter how athletic and skilled you are. If you have a low basketball IQ, that's also going to limit how good you can be. And it doesn't matter how athletic, skilled, or smart you are. If you have no heart, you have no chance. So make sure you build the house you want to live in next season. And as any homeowner will tell you, the upkeep of your house is a never-ending process. If you don't take steps to maintain your house, it will fall apart and deteriorate. Constant upgrades, replacements, and renovations are a must. A house is never complete. The same is true for your game. You must constantly and consistently work on your athleticism, work on your skills, work on your basketball IQ, and work on your mental toughness on a year-round basis for the duration of your playing career. Players like LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant are still working on their houses. Are you? Well, that's it for me, gang. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope I helped you raise your game. We want to thank the team at Dr. Dish for transforming basketball training with their high-tech shooting machines. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. All right, time to get back in the game. Today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show. So weak, tight ankles limit a player's ability to run and jump to their potential.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Fran Frischeller from ESPN, and you are listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
Thank you for tuning into the show that is sincerely committed to raising the game at every level by making every episode of Micro Clinic. I'm your host, Alan Stein. Today's show is brought to you by Dr. Dish, the only shooting machine that we endorse at Pure Sweat. In today's episode, I share the importance of purposeful and progressive ankle and foot training for reducing the likelihood of injury and for improving movement and basketball athleticism. But before I jump in, did you know that the Crossover team makes film sessions easy and efficient by organizing your video clips for you? You can quickly and easily share all of your clipped film with every player and coach in your program on any mobile device. Visit crossoverwithak.com/puresweat to try a game for free and let them help you be more productive in the film room next season. A basketball player's feet are extremely important. Basketball is supposed to be played standing upright on 2 feet. Therefore, every movement a player makes on the court is initiated through their feet. Everything starts at the feet. Similarly, can you guess what the most common injury is for basketball players at every level? Nope, it's not the knee. Yeah, it's the ankle. Strong feet and mobile ankles will lessen the occurrence of injury, decrease the time lost if an injury does occur, and will improve performance on the court. As obvious as these statements sound, most players and coaches put very little priority on training the feet properly. The goal of this episode is to change that, so please share this with every coach and player you know. Now, before I go further, let me make it crystal clear that this is not a research project or a case study. This is simply an episode and my stance on training the feet and my opposition to ankle braces and tape. That's purely my opinion. I'm in no way trying to refute the advice of qualified athletic trainers, podiatrists, or any legit study that's been conducted. However, this opinion is based on 15 years of experience in the field with thousands of hours of observation and a firm understanding of how the human body is meant to move, as well as numerous conversations I've had with other performance colleagues and professionals. Basketball shoes, by design, are to be rigid, with stiff soles to create as much stability as possible. To further increase stability, many players choose to wear ankle braces or get their ankles taped. Here lies the problem. By inviting external stability, you drastically limit the ankle's mobility. And the ankle joint was designed to be mobile. Severely limiting mobility will weaken the muscles of the ankles and feet. What happens to a person's forearm muscle when their arm has been immobilized in a cast from a broken wrist? Yeah, it atrophies. It weakens. It's the old use it or lose it. Well, so do the muscles of the feet when they're confined to rigid shoes and ankle braces for long periods of time. I know basketball players who wear basketball shoes and ankle braces over 20 to 25 hours per week. That's very similar to being in a cast. Now, I'm not opposed to wearing basketball shoes when playing. The stability and support is necessary for the types of planting and cutting that a basketball player does. But you don't need to wear them when you're training. And ankle braces? Tape? With the exception of a player who suffered a previous ankle injury, or someone taking a direct recommendation from a qualified foot specialist, ankle braces and tape are absolutely unnecessary when playing and when training. Are you not convinced? Flip on any ESPN classic game and watch some of the NBA games from the 70s or even 80s. In addition to wearing shorts that look like boxer briefs, every single player was wearing low-top Adidas sneakers. No braces, no tape. Guess what? They had very few ankle injuries. And for you dinosaurs and old-school purists, what did players wear before the Adidas shell tops? Yeah, Chuck Taylors. Those hardly qualify as a shoe. It's basically a thin piece of canvas and a flat rubber sole. I mean, talk about no ankle support. Yet despite the archaic footwear, there were very few ankle injuries in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Far less than there are today. You know why? Because players back then had strong feet and mobile ankles. Ankle braces weaken ankles and limit mobility, not to mention limit natural movement. Given how important the feet and ankles are, why would you intentionally do something that makes them weaker and less mobile? It makes no sense. Every time a player runs or jumps, they do what's called triple extension. They extend at their ankles, knees, and hips. If any one of those joints is not working properly, it limits the function and movement of the other two. So weak, tight ankles limit a player's ability to run and jump to their potential. Having weak, tight ankles will also cause the body to compensate in a variety of ways during movement, which can lead to knee and back issues. Remember, everything starts at the feet. So, how do you strengthen a player's ankles and feet? By setting them free. Take off your shoes. When you work out in your bare feet, or with socks on, you can feel all of the intrinsic muscles of your toes, feet, and ankles working and gripping. At first, this will feel very liberating, and probably a little awkward, because you rarely get to feel these muscles working when you're wearing basketball shoes and ankle braces. Now, quick note, I'm only suggesting barefoot training for players with healthy feet and no pre-existing conditions. Must be cleared by a doctor. Players with excessively high arches, previous stress fractures, or ankle sprains should only do barefoot training under the supervision of a qualified medical professional. So, how much is the right amount of barefoot training? Once a player has become acclimated to a variety of rudimentary barefoot exercises, they should do as many things barefoot as they can within the confines of a safe, controlled training environment. For most players, 5 to 10 minutes of barefoot work per workout is a good rule of thumb. Now, if you've been wearing ankle braces or tape regularly for an extended period of time, you actually need to wean yourself off of them. Don't go from wearing them all of the time to not at all. Cold turkey won't work. Your ankles and feet won't be ready for that. You're begging for an injury. You need to begin a progressive structured ankle and foot strengthening program while at the same time slowly decreasing your dependence on the braces or tape. So what should you do in your bare feet? Many of the same things you do with your shoes on. Squats, lunges, dynamic flexibility movements, and low-level hops on a soft surface are great ways to strengthen your ankles and feet when done shoeless. So to summarize, I personally feel very strongly that ankle braces and tape are not for players with healthy feet and ankles. Ankle braces and tape weaken the feet and make the ankles less mobile. Ankle braces and tape create additional stress and impact on the knees and lower back. And ankle braces and tape reduce a player's potential to run as fast and jump as high as they're capable of. So keep your feet strong and keep your ankles mobile this offseason. Well, that's it for me. I appreciate you listening. I hope I helped you raise your game. I want to thank our partners at Dr. Dish for uplifting basketball training with their groundbreaking shooting machines. Check out drdishbasketball.com for more. All right, let's get back in the gym. Today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show, nearly 70% of all ACL injuries are non-contact.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
Hi, this is Jay Billis of ESPN. You're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show. I'm sweating already.
Thanks for tuning into the show that truly serves the basketball community and makes every episode a micro clinic. I'm your host, Alan Stein. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Dr. Dish, the creators of the world's best shooting machine. In today's episode, I share what you need to know to reduce the occurrence and severity of knee injuries. But before I jump in, did you know that Crossover makes film sessions easy and efficient by organizing your video clips for you? You can easily share your clipped film with everyone in your program on any mobile device. Visit crossoverwithak.com/puresweat to try a game for free and let them help you be more productive in the film room next season. Although statistically, female athletes are 5 to 8 times more likely to suffer an ACL injury, these injuries unfortunately can and will happen to even the most elite male athletes on the planet. Here are some things that you need to know. Nearly 70% of all ACL injuries are non-contact and are the result of an improper landing or from a quick change of direction. The ACL is located inside the knee and stabilizes the joint by preventing the shin bone, the tibia, from sliding forward beneath the thigh bone, the femur. A hard twist or excessive pressure on the ACL can tear it. The cause of most ACL tears is a sudden, abrupt change in force to the knee. This can occur during a quick change of direction or a landing from a jump. Female athletes are at a higher risk because of a wider pelvis and a larger, what's called, Q angle. Greater incidence of knee valgus and foot pronation. Note, these are structural and genetic issues that cannot be addressed through training. Additional factors that contribute to ACL injuries include a smaller hamstring to quadriceps strength ratio, poor recruitment of the hamstrings during landing, inappropriate jumping and landing mechanics, and weak hip abductors. Now, these are things that can be addressed through training. Every basketball player on the planet, male or female, over the age of 10, should participate in an ACL injury reduction program. Notice the word reduction. I choose my terminology very carefully. It isn't possible to prevent ACL injuries, or any injury for that matter, but proper, consistent training can absolutely reduce the occurrence. Here are the 4 key pillars to a sound ACL injury reduction program. Number 1, improve ankle and hip mobility. The knee joint is designed to be stable. The ankle and hip joints are designed to be mobile. Allowing both the ankle and hip joints to go through a full range of motion during movement reduces stress on the knee. If the ankle, in particular, has a limited range of motion when landing from a jump, because it's either immobile or locked in a rigid ankle brace, the vast majority of the impact is then redirected and absorbed by the knee. Barefoot exercises can be an excellent tool in strengthening the feet and improving the mobility in the ankles. Yoga is an excellent way to improve mobility in the hips. Number 2, increase strength in the posterior side of the lower body, talking primarily about the hamstrings and butt. Running and jumping are fairly quad dominant, using the muscles of the thighs. So it's vital to target both the hamstrings and butt when strength training. Both the hamstrings and butt play a major role in protecting the ACL when landing from a jump and when planting and cutting. Some tips when strength training include using isolateral exercises when possible, meaning one leg at a time, controlling the eccentric part of the movement, that's the negative portion, the lowering portion, and always maintaining proper alignment and form. Number three, use proper footwork when decelerating, planting, and cutting. Basketball is not a speed game. It's a starting and stopping game. It's a reaction game. It's a change of direction game. Incorporating acceleration and deceleration drills into your yearly training program is essential for preparing the body for the rigors of the game. A T-step, or often called a hockey stop, is an ideal way to safely and efficiently put on the brakes when planting and cutting. Prior to planting and cutting, you want to turn your hips and plant your outside foot perpendicular to the direction you were going. For example, if running a sprint from baseline to midcourt and back to the original baseline, you would want to plant your foot parallel to the midcourt line, thus perpendicular to the direction you were running. This foot position will provide a strong braking mechanism for the knee, as well as be the best position for a strong transition to the desired direction. It's important to keep your center of gravity low during each transition and in training, and make sure you get an equal number of reps for each foot. Number four, use sound landing mechanics. It's very rare a player injures their knee when jumping. It's the landing that causes the problems. That's when the impact occurs. Players need to learn to land with their weight distributed along the power pads of their feet. That's kind of the front meaty part. They should not land on their toes. They should not land on their heels, right in the center. They should allow the impact to be absorbed in their ankles, knees, and hips. See, you want it to dissipate over all three joints. An easy way to teach this is to practice landing barefoot on a soft surface. Use a verbal cue of a quiet landing or a soft landing. The key is conditioning a player to subconsciously land softly, quietly, and on balance every time they land. Players should avoid a knock-kneed position in both jumping and landing. So one more time, the four pillars of ACL injury reduction. Number one, improve ankle and hip mobility. Number two, increase strength in the posterior side of the lower body. Number three, use proper footwork when decelerating, planting, and cutting. Number four, use sound landing mechanics. I'm a huge advocate of going through a comprehensive movement-based warm-up before all workouts, practices, and games. I strongly encourage you to incorporate these four pillars into each and every warm-up. That way, you're working on ACL injury reduction every single day. That's it for me. Thank you so much for listening. I hope I helped you raise your game. I want to thank the team at Dr. Dish for transforming basketball training with their high-tech shooting machines. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. And if you're looking for a quality off-season training program and off-season and summer training resources, please check the new stuff we've released through Pure Sweat Performance at puresweatbasketball.com. All right, time to get back in the gym. Thanks for tuning in to The Rewind, where we dig back in our vault of previous shows. I'm your host, Alan Stein. On today's Rewind episode of the Pure Sweat Basketball Show...
I also knew that I needed to like their coaches and love their players because I was going to spend 80% of my time with those guys.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Reese Davis from ESPN, and you're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
Thanks for listening to the show that covers all things basketball. I'm your host, Alan Stein. We do this show to serve you, so your feedback is not only welcome, it's extremely valuable. Please email me directly at alan@puresweatbasketball.com with your thoughts and suggestions. In today's episode, Drew Hanlon offers insight into what college coaches really look for when recruiting a player. Drew, I'm going to ask you a pretty open-ended question, my man. What do college coaches really look for when they're recruiting a player?
I've got a golden five, and obviously there's a million things that they look for when they're evaluating the players. It also depends on kind of the program, what the coach is like, and stuff like that. But I think these five kind of blanket what most coaches look for. Number one, is he a winner? Because I think that so many times people look for players that, you know, care more about winning games than just stats and box scores and stuff like that. Guys that, you know, prioritize the little things, boxing out, diving on the floor, communicating, doing those things, instead of guys that kind of are flashy. They care about the good-looking socks, the good-looking shoes, the bands, etc. So basically, is he a winner? Number one. Number two, how can he help us on the court? They're looking for things that translate to their system, to their program, things that can help them improve as a team. Number three is, how can they hurt us on the court? Meaning, are there things like, he doesn't play defense? Well, that's going to hurt our defensive system. Are we willing to kind of take those hits in our program? Number four, will he help or hurt us in the locker room? I think most coaches prioritize this big time. You know, there's guys that might be high character guys that actually help elevate their program. Maybe they don't have a hardworking team and they want to make sure that all those guys kind of increase their work habits and stuff like that. Or is he a selfish guy that's going to bring the energy down in the locker room? So number four is kind of, will he help or hurt the locker room? And then number five is, how does he respond to adversity? And this one is huge, and this is one that's a very big trend among college coaches these days, because guys want to know, coaches want to know, can they trust a player when they're tired? Can they trust a player when things aren't going their way? Because there are going to be slumps. You know, there are going to be times, you know, just like every rookie and every freshman have, where they're going to have ups and downs. It's going to be a roller coaster. Well, when they're down, are they bringing other people down? And there was a great quote the other day during the Celtics broadcast where Brad Stevens basically said during a timeout, he's like, if you guys aren't having things go your way, make sure that you're lifting somebody else up so that basically they don't have things go down as well. So if you're not doing something to contribute, make sure that you're helping other people contribute. And that's just that team first mentality that I think that is important. So those are my five golden ones that I think that most college coaches look for. And again, I think there are some situations where, you know, if you're the number one player in the country, you can probably take a hit in one of those other categories and they might overlook it. But if you're a mid-major player like myself, you got to be checking more than, you know, four of those boxes if you want scholarships.
You know, what I liked best about what you just said is all those things are controllable. I mean, you didn't really dive deep into on-the-court skills and talent per se. You can control something in each one of those five areas. I mean, you know, looking for a winner doesn't just mean that the end result is always winning. They're looking for people that are selfless. They're looking for people that are competitive. You know, do you want to win when you play ping pong just as bad as do you want to win when you're playing for a state championship? But I think it always goes back to, we've said a million times, controlling the controllables. But now let's talk about actual on the court. Now, I know you said coaches are looking for specific skill sets that fit into their system, but what are some other on the court traits that obviously most coaches are going to want?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, especially at the high level, they want guys that can make shots, which means not only just shooting, but finishing around the rim, because ultimately converting is all that matters. You see all these workout mixtapes with flashy moves, and then they cut it off because they didn't finish,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And I think especially in this day and age, there's not many good shooters. And so if you can have guys that can space the floor, then your offense is going to be better. If you have guys that are finishers at the rim, then obviously now you open up and you can score from all three levels. That's priority number one for most guys. Number two is, who can they guard? You know, what positions can they guard? Because if they're a guy that can guard one through four, well, now they're super valuable because they can switch on ball screens. They can have different mismatch problems. So who can you guard? And that's something that's basically the number one question when talking to an NBA GM or scout or anything like that. But in colleges, they're starting to realize if you can shut people down, you're super valuable. And then the last thing that I think is very important is, can you play within the team system? You know, there's a lot of guys that can go out and just get buckets on their own, and especially at the high school level, because there's always weak links that you can attack. But can you score within the system? And then also, can you guard within the system? Meaning, can you make the proper rotations? Can you be in gap positions and all that kind of stuff? I think that's super valuable as well.
You know, in my time at Montrose and at DeMatha, numerous times I'd have college coaches reach out to me and ask about players. And funny enough, they never asked about performance-related metrics. I mean, they could see how athletic or unathletic a player may be. They were always asking me more along the lines of character questions. They were asking, is this kid on time for every weight workout? You know, generally speaking, is he a good guy? One of the ones I found really fascinating, and I'd like to hear your take, I mean, just on the person that you're going to be, they would ask numerous times, would this be someone you'd let date your daughter or let date your sister? Like, is this the high-quality character of person that you want in your locker room? And I remember when you were choosing Belmont, you were talking about how much time you were going to spend. When you were actually looking to see if that was a good fit for you, I think coaches need to do the same thing.
No question. For me, I always was talking about the three pillars of my kind of recruitment. As number one, I wanted to see if it was a great basketball program. And what I meant by that was, you know, do they win? Because I prioritize winning, and I wanted to make my dream of playing in the NCAA tournament a reality. I also knew that I needed to like their coaches and love their players, because I was going to spend 80% of my time with those guys. So that was the first pillar, is the basketball part. Second pillar was education, because I knew the ball was going to stop bouncing after college for me. I was a 5'11 white guy. I needed kind of something to have move forward. And so at the time when I entered college, I already had Pure Sweat rolling. I started Pure Sweat as a junior in high school. I wanted to improve my business knowledge so I could take Pure Sweat to a different level. So Belmont's entrepreneurship school was really high, but I eliminated schools right off the bat if they did not have good academic programs, because I wanted to be successful for 40 years after college instead of just being successful and having a fun 4 years in college. And then the third pillar was I had to like the school and the people that were around the school, meaning the administrators, the president, all that kind of stuff, because I wanted to pick a school that if I got hurt, I still enjoyed and still benefited from. And that's powerful, because I think too many times you see all these transfers. There's like 500 college transfers each year.
Yep.
And it's because people pick the biggest name, or, you know, and a lot of times it's just because they're embarrassed. You know, like for me, I was a mid-major player. I had some high major schools recruit me, and I probably could have got, you know, more high major scholarships if I would have actively pursued them. But those wouldn't have been a good fit. I would have went to bad high major schools that would have lost, and I would have been miserable. And then I would have went to schools that maybe didn't have good academic programs, and I wouldn't have got the business knowledge that have helped me kind of, you know, turn Pure Sweat into a brand that I'm proud of.
Yeah. And you know, another thing that you've touched on before, especially with all the conversations you have with college coaches, young players, if you're listening, please know that somebody is always watching you. You know, sometimes I think players get so caught up in going to an event to get exposure where they can be under the bright lights, but they don't realize that someone's watching their every move. You know, I've had college coaches tell me that they spend more time watching a player when he comes out of the game than they do when he's in the game. They want to see his body language. Does he dap everybody up on the way down the bench, or does he go sulk at the end of the bench and put a towel on his head? Would you agree that college coaches are looking at everything before they're going to offer you a scholarship?
100%. I want to touch on two little stories. I've heard multiple stories about the first one, and the first one is tweets. I mean, there's been so many players that has lost scholarships based on tweets and Facebook posts, because they look at it and they're, you know, tweeting at 1:30 in the morning that they're drunk or they're going out and partying, and guys are like, if I can't, you know, he's with his parents right now. If he's acting a fool with his parents, I definitely can't trust him when he's on his own. So that's the first and foremost thing, is I've seen so many players lose scholarships on that. The other thing is I actually saw a guy lose an NBA contract. He was in the elevator.
From social media?
Well, no, from a different aspect. Oh. He smelled of weed.
Oh, wow.
And this guy was actually coming to meet with him. He was going to his room, and he was going to get ready, so he was going to shower up and stuff like that. Well, this certain GM showed up about a half an hour early, happened to be in the same elevator as him. Well, obviously, you don't ever know the GM. You know the coaches, you know that kind of stuff. He was in the same elevator as him, reeked of weed. He went up to his room to go shower, prepare for this meeting, and the meeting was canceled. This guy was going to get offered a one-year contract in the NBA, and instead he's playing overseas, and it's all because he smelled of weed. And so, he tells us to this day that it was not him smoking, but he was around the wrong people. Somebody was smoking around him, and because of that, he's playing overseas instead of playing in the NBA, which is a big time difference. And it's all because he made one mistake that led to a life-changing event.
Okay, that's it for today. We sure appreciate you listening. I hope we helped you raise your game. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel for the latest performance and skill training videos, as well as exclusive content from this show. All right, we need to get back in the gym.